Welcome back. Last time we talked about how Menelik journeyed to Jerusalem to meet his father King Solomon for the first time, and how he impressed his father so much that Solomon decided his son needed to become the king of Ethiopia. And to aid in this, he decided to send down a delegation of the firstborn sons of his most trusted advisors whenever Menelik went back home. Now, it's not clear to me whether this was a power play or just a helpful gesture, since Queen Makeda had already promised Solomon that, should their union produce seed, she would eventually renounce the queenship and let her son take over the reins down in Ethiopia. But as I said last time, the delegation of the firstborn were not happy, not pleased at all at the prospect of being banished to the backwaters of Ethiopia, especially because they were used to the opulence of Jerusalem in general and the Temple of Solomon in particular, which was loaded with priceless artifacts. The most valuable of these, the most functional and the most powerful, was the Ark of the Covenant. You know, to have the Ark was to have God on call, because above the mercy seat, between the wings of the cherubim, you know, atop the Ark, is where God appeared, or a God appeared anyway, you know, to give instructions to the Israelites. And starting in chapter 45 of the Kebron Agest, a ringleader with a plan emerges among the delegation of the firstborn. And the children of the nobles of Israel, who were commanded to depart with the son of the king, took counsel together, saying, "What shall we do? For we have left our country and our birthplace, and our kinsfolk and the people of our city. Now come ye, let us establish a covenant between us only, whereof our kinsfolk shall know nothing, that we will love each other in that country. None shall hasten or tarry here, and we will neither fear nor have any doubt. For God is here, and God is there, and may God's will be done. And to him be praise forever and ever. Amen." And Azarias and Emias, sons of the priest, answered, "Let not the other matter, that our kinsfolk hate us, cause us sorrow, but let us sorrow on account of our lady Zion, because they are making us to leave her." Now, our lady Zion refers to the Ark. As members of the priesthood, they were devoted to the service of the Ark, as if they were knights devoted to a particular lady. So they personalized the Ark. They thought of it as a person. They thought of her as a lady. And I think they refer to her as Lady Zion because Zion, the city of David, is where she was before Solomon brought her into Jerusalem. You may have heard Zion used to refer to Jerusalem, but Zion was just a small fortress city that King David took from the Jebusites. It was near Jerusalem, but not in Jerusalem proper. That story is in 2 Samuel chapter 5, and verses 7 and 9 say that David took the stronghold of Zion, and David dwelt in the fort and called it the city of David. And as part of the younger generation, Azarias and Emias and the rest may not have even been aware of the history of the Ark before it was taken to Zion by King David. "But what shall we do," said the others, "if we resist his command, the king will kill us, and we are unable to transgress the word of our fathers or the king's command. And what shall we do concerning Zion, our lady?" And Azarias, the son of Zadok the priest, answered and said, "I will counsel you what we shall do, but make a covenant with me to the end of your lives, and swear to me that you will not repeat it, whether we live or whether we die, or whether we be taken captive or whether we go forth unhindered." And they swore an oath, and then Azariah started to lay out his plan to steal the ark and take it with them to Ethiopia. You know, as a member of the priesthood, he had the necessary access. You know, as one of the others pointed out, "Thou canst go into the house of God in the place of thy father Zadok, and the keys are continually in thy hand. But ponder well what we counsel thee before they take the keys out of thy hand. Thou knowest the hidden openings, or windows, which King Solomon made, but none of the priests may enter therein except thy father once each year in order to offer up sacrifice in the Holy of Holies on behalf of himself and on behalf of the people. Ponder, consider, and sleep not in the matter of thy wish to carry away Zion, and we will depart with her as soon as she hath been committed to our care, and we shall have joy and our father's sorrow when she arriveth with us in the country of Ethiopia." And Azariah said unto them, "Do ye what I tell you, and we shall succeed. Give ye to me, each of you, 10 didrachmas, and I will give them to a carpenter, so that he will make haste to prepare for me good planks of wood. Now because of his love of money, he will fasten them together very quickly, of the height and breadth and length and size of our Lady Zion. And I will give him the dimensions of myself, and I will say unto him, prepare for me pieces of wood for a framework, so that I may make a raft therefrom. And we are going to travel over the sea, and in the event of the ship sinking, I shall be able to get up on the raft, and we shall be saved from the sea." Kind of a cover story here. So when the carpenter gets done, Azariah has a bunch of prefabricated boards from which he can quickly assemble a wooden mock-up of the ark, the same shape and size as the ark, minus the poles, and also enough planks to build this fictional raft, which, not coincidentally, would be plenty to box up the real ark. And when it's about time for them to set out for Ethiopia, he gets permission to conduct a sacrificial ceremony in the temple. And during this ceremony, he makes the switch, assisted by his brother Elmias and 2 other accomplices. Now, this wooden mock-up was the size and shape of the ark, minus the carrying poles, but it didn't have all the gold and stuff all over it like the real ark, so it wasn't going to fool anybody for long, except that apparently they kept a kind of fringed slip cover over the ark when it was not in use inside the temple. This was first mentioned back in chapter 36 of the Keber and Agast, when Menelech asked Solomon for a souvenir to take home to his mother Makeda. He said, "And as for Zion, the tabernacle of the law of God, give me a portion of the fringe of the covering thereof, and I will worship it with my mother and with all those who are subject to my sovereignty." Now, I think the tradition of covering the ark started in Numbers 4:5, where it says, "And when the camp setteth forward, Aaron shall come and his sons, and they shall take down the covering veil and cover the ark of testimony with it." So originally, the covering was just the curtain that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the tabernacle. But that was just temporary during the moves of the Israelites from place to place. You know, when they took the tabernacle down, you know, the tabernacle tent, they used that veil to cover the ark. By the time the ark had a permanent home in Solomon's temple, they apparently had made a fancy form-fitting covering with a fringe for it. And when Azariah replaced the real ark with the wooden mock-up, he put that fringed slip cover over it so that it looked just like the real ark, like Lady Zion. But in the meantime, Solomon was preparing a surprise gift to send to Makeda, his old girlfriend. Since she had requested that Menelek bring home part of the fringe, Solomon decided to send her not just the whole fringe, but the whole covering itself. And he had a new covering made to go over the ark. And then in chapter 51, and he said unto Zadok the priest, go, bring that covering which is upon Zion, and take thee this covering which is better than that, and lay it over the two cherubs which are below it. And he told Zadok to give the old covering to Menelek, and say to him, take and worship this covering of Zion, for thy mother sent a message concerning this, and hath said unto thee thyself, give us some of the fringe of its covering, which we can worship, so that we may not, like the heathen, worship another god. And at this point I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to get caught. Because when Zadok takes the old covering off, he'll see that it's just a wooden mock-up and not the real ark. But they faked me out, because that's not what happened. Chapter 52 actually just starts out matter-of-factly, and Zadok the priest went and gave David the covering of Zion, and he delivered unto him all the commands which Solomon had spoken. Now, David here is not King David, not the original King David. It's just another name for Menelek. Because when Solomon decided that Menelek was going to be the king of Ethiopia, by what authority, I don't know, it was also decided that he deserved to take the name of a former king. And since he had reminded Solomon of his father David, Menelek became David II, at least to the Israelites. He would be King Menelek I to the Ethiopians. But what's this deal with Zadok? At this point, I'm asking myself if he was in on the plot from the beginning, or if he just saw that the ark had been stolen and realized who had done it, and he was covering up for his son till he could get away. But it doesn't tell us just yet. It lets us wonder about it, and it builds the suspense. It's a good writing technique. The Kebra Nagast is really a very well-crafted story to be as old as it is, and it's at least 700 years old. Well, in the meantime, they've loaded up the packing crate containing the ark on a wagon full of junk and dirty clothes and stuff, and they set off on their journey to Ethiopia. And once they get out of sight, they really pick up the pace, and in certain places, they were helped by angels, aliens, Yahwehlians, who parted the waters or levitated the travelers over the difficult terrain, until in chapter 53, and when the sons of the warriors of Israel saw that they had come in one day, a distance of 13 days' march, and that they were not tired or hungry or thirsty, neither man nor beast, and that they all felt that they had eaten and drunk their fill, these sons of the warriors of Israel knew and believed that this thing was from God. And they said unto their king, let us let down the wagons, for we have come to the water of Ethiopia. This is the Tekazi, which floweth down from Ethiopia, and watereth the valley of Egypt. And they let down their wagons there, and set up their tents. And Azarias made a sign to Elmaeus, and he said unto him, go, beautify and dress our lady, so that our king may see her. And Menelek had no idea up to this point that they even had the ark. And Azarias, con man that he was, proceeds to convince him that it was there not because he had stolen it, but because it was the will of God. And Menelek was willing to accept that, maybe because of the help that the angels, the aliens, Yahwehlians, had provided in moving the ark from Jerusalem to Ethiopia. And since it was the will of God, Menelik couldn't return the ark even if he wanted to. And for that matter, Solomon couldn't take it back even if he tried. So anyway, they hauled the packing crate out of the junk wagon and opened it up, revealed the ark, and that prompted Menelik, among other things, to say, this is in chapter 54, "Behold the splendor like the sun." Because this thing had apparently powered up when they started moving. And it may have even been the power source for all the levitations and such along the route. It's a good thing they had it buried under the laundry pile in the junk wagon, or somebody would have spotted it shining before they left Jerusalem. And we're up to chapter 55. "Then the wagons rose up as beforehand. They set out early in the morning, and the people sang songs to Zion, and they were all raised up the space of a cubit. And as the people of the country of Egypt bade them farewell, they passed before them like shadows, and the people of the country of Egypt worshipped them, for they saw Zion moving in the heavens like the sun." And Zion is the ark, remember. So it's lit up and levitating, and levitating the people below it and moving across the sky in front of them, leading the way. And it sounds like it stayed lit up all the way to Ethiopia. Because later on in that same chapter, "They came to the country of Belontos, which is a country of Ethiopia. And they rejoiced there, and they encamped there, because they had reached the border of their country with glory and joy, without tribulation on the road, in a wagon of the Spirit, by the might of heaven and of Michael the archangel. And all the provinces of Ethiopia rejoiced, for Zion sent forth a light like that of the sun into the darkness, wheresoever she came." Now, meanwhile, back at the temple in Jerusalem, in chapter 56, Solomon tells Zadok about the dream that he'd had when he was sleeping with Makeda. I believe I talked about this last time. It's the one where the sun leaves Judah and goes to light up Ethiopia. I think I told you about that. But anyway, the first time he told that dream, I thought the sun, S-U-N, represented Solomon's son, S-O-N, Menelik. But Zadok figures out that it's something else. It's something with the splendor of the sun. Something that moves in the heavens like the sun. Something that sends forth a light like that of the sun, wheresoever it goes. Zadok says, "O my Lord, why didst thou not tell me before that thou hast seen a vision of this kind? Thou makest my knees to tremble. Woe be unto us if our sons have carried off our lady, the holy heavenly Zion, the tabernacle of the law of God." And the king answered and said unto him, "Our wisdom is forgotten, and our understanding is buried. Verily the sun that appeared unto me long ago when I was sleeping with the queen of Ethiopia was the symbol of the holy Zion. But tell me, yesterday when thou didst take off the splendid covering that was lying upon Zion, didst thou not make certain that Zion was there?" And Zadok the priest answered and said, "I did not, Lord. It had three coverings over it, and I took off the outermost and dressed Zion in the covering which thou didst give me, and I brought the other to thee." So finally they resolved the suspense, and we know why Zadok didn't raise the alarm immediately. If we believe him, I'm still not too sure. And the king said unto Zadok, "Go quickly and look at our lady and examine her closely." And Zadok the priest took the keys and went and opened the house of the sanctuary. And he examined the place quickly, and he found there nothing except the wooden boards which Azarias had fastened together and had made to resemble the sides of the pedestal of Zion. Well, Solomon raises a posse and sends it after Menelik. He tells them to capture him and bring him back to Jerusalem, put everybody else to death. But, of course, by then, it's too late. They're already in Ethiopia. Now, at this point, the Kebra Nagast goes into a bunch of historical chapters referring back to what happened in the Old Testament. And it doesn't return to the story of Menelik and Makeda and the Ark until chapter 84, where it says, "And the king of Ethiopia returned to his country with great joy and gladness, and marching along with their songs and their pipes and their wagons, like an army of heavenly beings, the Ethiopians arrived from Jerusalem at the city of Wekrom in a single day, and they sent messengers in ships to announce their arrival to Makeda, the queen of Ethiopia, and to report to her how they had found every good thing, and how her son had become king, and how they had brought the heavenly Zion. And she caused all this glorious news to be spread abroad, and she made a herald to go round about in all the country that was subject to her, ordering the people to meet her son, and more particularly the heavenly Zion, the tabernacle of the God of Israel. And they blew horns before her, and all the people of Ethiopia rejoiced, from the least to the greatest, men as well as women, and the soldiers rose up with her to meet their king. And she came to the city of the government, which is the chief city of the kingdom of Ethiopia." Now, in later times, this city became the chief city of the Christians of Ethiopia. Now, what was the chief city of the kingdom of Ethiopia? And what became the chief city of the Christians of Ethiopia? Well, in both cases, the answer is Aksum. And you can spell this either A-K-S-U-M or A-X-U-M. And it, when it says that she came to the city of Aksum, it doesn't mean Makeda. It means Lady Zion, the Ark of the Covenant. And that's where it remains today. But why? Well, chapters 102 through 115 contains an extended polemic against the Jews, the point of which seems to be that the Jews were unworthy stewards of the Ark, and that's why the Yahweh Elohim allowed it to be carried off by the Ethiopians. Didn't just allow it, in fact, they assisted in carrying it off and putting it in a safe place in Aksum. Now, I'm sure people consider those chapters to be anti-Semitic, especially chapter 108, which is titled "Concerning the Wickedness of the Iniquitous Jews." But one of the main points of the Kebra Nagast is that the dynasty that ruled Ethiopia from that time all the way up to the 1970s was directly descended from King Solomon, beginning with Menelik I, who became king after Queen Makeda renounced the throne. Now, how can you be anti-Semitic when you have such pride in your Semitic ancestry? And how can you be anti-Semitic when you practice the Jewish religion like they did, or close to it? You know, the services were spoken in the Ethiopic language instead of in Hebrew, but that's about the only difference. The Beta Israel black Jews who descended from the people of the Kebra Nagast story lived in Ethiopia until the mid-1980s or early 1990s. And by that time, all but a few of them had been repatriated to Israel. Now, during the early Christian era, most of the so-called black Jews had become to believe that Jesus was the Messiah and had converted to Christianity and formed the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. And it's their version of the Bible that has the book of Enoch in it that we looked at back in sermons, episodes 3 and 4. But anyway, this was the state of affairs when the Kebra Nagast was written. And if the Orthodox Ethiopians were anti-Semites, At least they were equal opportunity haters, since the Quebranagast gives the Catholics hell, as well as the Jews. Back in chapter 93, which has the title, How the Men of Rome Destroyed the Faith, it says that at one time the kings of Ethiopia and the kings of Rome were brethren and held the Christian faith and believed in an orthodox manner in the preaching of the apostles up to the time of Constantine. But that afterwards Satan, who hath been the enemy of man from of old, rose up and seduced the people of the country of Rome, and they corrupted the faith of Christ, and they introduced heresy into the church of God by the mouth of Nestorius. Now, I don't really understand this Nestorian heresy that they're talking about here, but it had to do with the personhood of Jesus, whether he was human or divine or both, and whether he was one person or two separate people. You know, they apparently took this theology thing pretty seriously, since they were in effect saying there was a satanic element in the Roman Catholic Church. Now, if you look at the show art, it's an early 21st century photograph of the Ark of the Covenant Church in Aksum, Ethiopia, the place where the Ark is believed to still be kept, kept away from the prying eyes of the public. Whether they be Nazis or adventurous archaeologists with fedoras and bullwhips. And you can see a priest standing out by the fence talking to a female member of the public. And I guess they can fraternize like that, but they're not allowed outside of that fence whatsoever. They live their entire lives inside the church compound. Actually, there's only one guardian monk at a time. And when they get ready to die, they name their successor. And if they die without naming a successor, then they, you know, the monks take a vote on it. But whoever the guardian monk is, the guardian priest or whatever, they're the only ones that are allowed to see Lady Zion. They're devoted to taking care of it. Well, I think that's going to just about do it, not only for this episode, but for this whole story arc about the Ark. The Ark, you might say. Ark. Next time, we'll get back to the Bible. Maybe we'll start Leviticus, since that be next up in the sequence after Exodus, which we had just finished before we started this Ark. But until then, keep the faith. Whether you're Jewish, Catholic, Orthodox, or ancient astronautical,